Welcome to another episode of What Matters in North Carolina. On today's show, we will be speaking with Dr. Robert Lipke. Of course, you know him as the education guru of Civitas. We will be talking to him about a recent string of articles in the News and Observer that have been critical of charter schools, taking some of their points and talking about them and breaking them down. And we'll be getting to that soon, but right after talking about subscribing to this show. Again, it is the easiest way for you to listen to the show. All you have to do is search What Matters in North Carolina on Apple Podcasts or Podcast Addict or wherever you listen to podcasts on your Android device. It can be on a phone, it can be on a tablet, it can be on a computer, wherever you are listening to the show or however you're currently consuming the show. If you're doing it through the web browser at freedomactionnetwork.com, or maybe you're linking to it through Facebook, you can do it in an even simpler way just by subscribing to the show. Now, that's how you hear from us, but we want to hear from you. And now there are three ways we can hear from you. There are, of course, Facebook and Twitter, where you can search What Matters NC and you will find us there. You can talk to us and send us messages. We can send them back. It'll be great. But also, we want to hear your voice. And to do that, all you have to do is call us at 919-747-8063. Again, that's 919-747-8063. And you can leave us a message about what you want to talk about, what you want to rant about. All you have to do is call that line and leave us a minute or two message that's clean. And if it's good and topical and relevant and all that in our judgment, we'll play it on the air. We will play it on the air. Just call and say, my name is Matt, and I have something I want to talk about, and so on. Leave us a 1 or 2 minute message there. We'll listen to them. We'll comb through them, and we'll decide which ones to put on the air every week. Now, we will get right into our segment with Dr. Robert Lipke. All right, Bob, welcome back to the show.
It is good to be here, Matt.
So last time you were on the show, we talked about ways parents can answer arguments about school choice or negative arguments about school choice. And now we have to kind of address the topic a similar topic, but it's not parents who are the adversarial party in this, is it?
No. It's a whole lot of other people.
But, oh, yeah.
I hope our listeners don't think that we have one-track minds here. But this is, as you can see, the whole issue of parental choice is front and center in North Carolina.
Right. And we're talking about the recent articles from the News and Observer.
That's right.
The Raleigh In-N-Out.
Yeah.
About school choice, about charter schools.
That's what we want to talk about today. Was, as anybody who was a regular reader of the News and Observer, you will see that over the last week, week and a half, they've had a series of articles that have been highly critical of charter schools and the way they're operating, levels of accountability, etc., in North Carolina. And I actually had posted a piece this morning that had responded to one of their earlier articles, which was titled, made the assertion that charter schools are richer and whiter than traditional public schools, and each claim of which I take issue with. And we wanted to talk about some of those things today.
Right. And really quickly, so to kind of recap for people who may not know, a charter school is a public school.
A charter school is a public school. That is correct, Matt.
So it's not a private school, tuition paid type thing.
It receives taxpayer money.
Mm-hmm.
The difference, there are a couple major differences. It has a private governing board as opposed to a traditional public school, which has a school board. And it's also, charter schools are given additional flexibility administratively to do things that they were originally intended to do, which is to prove to be labs for innovation. They're more experimental in nature. And they often also are intended to provide specific curricular offerings. In other words, some schools are built around Greek books or a classical curriculum. Some are built more around science, things like that aren't necessarily offered in a traditional public school, which is more broadly based. So they can be more experimental with regards to a curriculum. They have greater flexibility with regards to administration. So And those are the major differences, but they do receive tax rear funding.
Right. And no one is in a, you know, there's no district necessarily as far as, you know, like when I move into a house, my kid goes to X elementary school, X middle school, X high school. No kids are districted into you're going to this charter school, right?
That's correct. You have to apply to enter a charter school and be accepted.
Okay, so this is, I mean, this is a totally voluntary thing and not a decided.
Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. So this is a totally
voluntary. That's correct. You have to choose.
Let me run it through because I'm going to cut all the part with the ringtone out. So I'm going to re-put the question. So this is a totally voluntary association sending your child to this. This is not a private school where the school you're paying and sending it. I mean, this is a kind of a melding in a lot of ways between the philosophies of a private school and a public school. But it's all voluntary to go there. No one's told to go there. It is a voluntary association.
That's correct. Charter schools are organic in many ways in that they spring out of communities, out of families, out of educators who have a specific goal, an idea about what a school should look like. And as they get up and are running, they attract certain types of families, certain types of students, and parents choose to go there. So that is a difference between public and private. That's not to say one's better than the other. They are simply another choice, another educational opportunity to parents to look at and to access if they so choose.
All right. And so dig a little more into show us a little more about what are the claims that are made in the NNO article. What are they talking about in the NNO article? They kind of make this blatant statement, you know, they're richer and whiter than traditional public schools, but what are they really saying?
Well, that's what the majority of their research are, and the opponents assert for most against most charter schools in North Carolina is that when they oppose them, they say that the student population is richer and that it's whiter, and this is the primary claim of the NNO article, and I take issue with both of those findings. And let me explain why. If you look at the assertion here about whiter, there's a big premise that's behind these claims, first of all. And that's really not even addressed here. And that's involves the whole concept of diversity. And as anybody who lives in Wake County knows, is diversity is a concept that pretty much drives the train with regards to the education of students in North Carolina, in Wake County at least. And that is school enrollment. One of the criteria, if not the primary criteria, in determining enrollment in many public schools is balancing racial demographics, etc. Believing that if you prevent schools from being dominated by a certain socioeconomic group, whether it be richer or poor, that a more balanced group will be better, will do better academically. That's an assertion that is not proved conclusively in research, ever. There's been a lot of research on it, but people, advocates have run wild with saying that this is true and that, you know, when a school is balanced demographically, that all students perform better academically.
I have a question, though. Isn't that just very kind of close to the idea of busing, you know, busing students across town, forced, a forced group of the same? I mean, isn't that a similar idea?
Well, it is the premise for busing, in that in order to balance these the populations of schools, to balance the racial composition, the means of doing so would be busing.
Right, and so, that led to a lot of problems. I mean, that led to lack of involvement in the school when you're talking about a kid being pushed across town to go to a different school that's not in their community. I mean, it led to all sorts of problems, didn't it?
Yes. As anybody who's been in Wake County for 10 years or more knows, it was a huge problem. It led to great tumult in schools. It led to a whole upending of the Wake County School Board. There was a great division within Wake County, within the community, about whether or not we should do this, how we should do it, and the actual outcomes of it, whether it even worked. And there's still debate to this day. I mean, if you look at a lot of the testing data, in a lot of ways, you could say it hasn't worked. So it's very inconclusive, very inconclusive. And you can, there hasn't been a lot of research done that shows that it's, you know, it's definitive, it definitively works. But yet at the same time, advocates, many of which, you know, write that are mouthpieces for the News and Observer, have, you know, taken and run with this and said, this works, it doesn't fail, we have to do it. And that's the premise behind these richer and whiter claims. And if you look at, you know, some of the data behind, let's look at the data behind the richer claims. Now, what the main problem with this claim here is journalists often use for determining whether a school is poor or not what's called is the statistic for a free and reduced lunch. In other words, what percentage of a school population accesses or is eligible for free and reduced lunch? Now, a school population is eligible for that if the household income is about 180 or 130% over the federal poverty line, okay? So it's actually well above the poverty line, the actual poverty line. But the problem with this data is that it's not reliable, it's not valid, because you can actually have trend lines where the actual poverty rate is going down, and because of the elevation of the FRL lines, which is 130 and 180% of federal poverty lines, those numbers are actually going up. So they don't really accurately gauge what federal poverty levels are. So you have wild things going on, like, and this was asserted in the article, that over half of the school children in North Carolina, and the exact figure was 53%, come from poor households. Now, that's not accurate at all. Now, how the term richer comes in here is because, and this is a little, journalists are playing a little loose with these terms here. They're basically saying because they have less free eligibility for free and reduced lunch, because you're not poor, that necessarily makes you rich. Is that true?
Right. It's kind of confusing the term.
That's right. So it's a very deceptive, disingenuous, and inaccurate claim that schools are richer. And to say that they're whiter is based on research and a claim about diversity that's not accepted, you know, by a large percentage of the population, that diversity should be the criteria that drives enrollment. It's just not so.
So it's just for people who focus on diversity, it's not enough.
Correct. I'm saying it in many ways can be brought into consideration in enrollment, but should it drive the train? Should it be the utmost, most important characteristic for enrollment? Well, we claim to be a colorblind society, but we do a lot to.
We are colorblind in no way.
I said we claim to be a colorblind society.
We track this. I mean, everything you look at in every aspect of anything that's associated with government is tracking race, is tracking it to make sure everything is hunky-dory, and in doing so, very much focusing on it. So we are not a colorblind society.
We're obsessed with race.
We are very obsessed with race.
Does that mean it's unimportant? No, it's not unimportant, but in many respects, I think we do well to recalibrate its importance.
I would definitely agree with that, and I'm glad you brought it up because it's something that is in every aspect. You're right. It's almost like it's an obsession.
Well, that's the progressive mindset, is being able to manage, or the necessity of managing all our social interactions. And progressives assert that we need to do that. And this is the fallout, you know, of that mindset, that you can't, and that it has made the problem much, much worse.
And I definitely agree with that, because I think about on a level like kind of relating it to something else. If you over focus on something that you don't want to screw up, you're almost guaranteed to screw it up. I think about the Spartan races that I do, and you have to throw a spear into a hay person as part of every race. You get one shot at it or you're doing a penalty. And the guys who sit there and obsess about doing it and are so worried about screwing it up, screw it up. The guys that go up and do it usually do fine. And it's that kind of thing. If we sit here and obsess about messing up, you're almost bound to.
Yeah.
Psych yourself out, maybe. I don't know if it works on that level, but I think it could.
Yeah, I think we're supposed to not be conscious of it. We're everyone's aware of the tensions and the shortcomings. I that's not to say we don't have problems, but talking about them incessantly, isn't a solution to it.
Oh yeah, and talking about how colorblind we are all the time is proof that you're not. I mean, it's I don't think about it too often, the whole colorblind thing, but there are people who go, I don't see color. It's like, yeah, you do. The way our society emphasizes color, there's no way you can't. It's too in front. It's too much of a focal point to not see it. I mean, this article exists because someone looked at charter schools in the NNO staff meeting and said, I think there's too many white kids in this class, in this school.
This is also an interesting point, because if you look at support for charters, if you look at support for private schools, oftentimes the communities that have the largest percentages, the largest vocal support for these type of schools, are minorities. And that's surprising to most people, but oftentimes if you sit back and look at it, they are often the communities most impacted by areas, or the kids are in areas where the quality of the public schools isn't what it should be, and they're the ones that have poor choices. So there, those types of communities are often view these options as lifesavers for their children. And we should, embrace that. And the populations of a lot of these charter schools merely mirror the segregation that exists in the neighboring communities. So to say that these populations are, segregated or not, don't have the proper proportions, reflects an ignorance of how charters arose, what their nature is, and how they respond to communities that, that we shouldn't have. People should be aware of the differences, because they're important. They reflect the differences in the type of the institution and what their mission is.
Right, and it just sounds like this article was started going out and going after these schools. But thank you for coming on and talking with us.
All right. Well, it's been good to be here, man.
Good to have you back. Thank you, Bob, for coming on the show and continuing to be our education guru here at the Freedom Action Network on What Matters NC. Thank you, the listeners, for tuning in. Subscribe, follow on social media, call in. That number again is 919-747-8063 because we want to hear from you. And we'll catch you next time.